victory in temptation from the fourth chapter of Matthew. I read the first 11 verses of that chapter. Then was Jesus led up of the Spirit into the wilderness to be tempted of the devil. And when he had fasted 40 days and 40 nights, he was afterward hungry. And when the tempter came to him, he said, "If thou be the Son of God, command that these stones be made bread." But he answered and said, "It is written, man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceedeth out of the mouth of God." Then the devil taketh him up into the holy city, and setteth him on a pinnacle of the temple, and saith unto him, "If thou be the Son of God, cast thyself down. For it is written, he shall give his angels charge concerning thee, and in their hands they shall bear thee up, lest at any time thou shalt dash thy foot against a stone." And Jesus said unto him, "It is written again, thou shalt not tempt the Lord thy God." And again the devil taketh him up into an exceeding high mountain, and showeth him all the kingdoms of the world, and the glory of them, and saith unto him, "All these things will I give thee, if thou wilt fall down and worship me." And then saith Jesus unto him, "Get thee hence, Satan, for it is written, thou shalt worship the Lord thy God, and him only shalt thou serve." And then the devil leaveth him, and behold, angels came and ministered unto him. You know, let me say first, you know, this is, as some churches particularly observe, this is what's called Reformation Week. Because back in October the 31st, 1517, Martin Luther broke away from the Catholic Church, said that the popes had no power to control purgatory, and that they did wrong in selling indulgences for a price. And that was 450 years ago. And the Protestantism and many of the churches started as of that day. Now, I think it's no accident that the Protestant religion and democracy have gone hand in hand. When the communists came over and tried to dominate one country after another, they succeeded best in those countries which had not learned democracy, because Protestantism flourishes along with democracy. It teaches freedom. That's the difference between Spain and America in their background of belief in freedom. I was over at a meeting this week, and somebody had just come from a Christian church meeting over in St. Louis, and he said they had a Baptist preacher talk to them over there. He related an incident about a German refugee he talked with. And he asked this German refugee, "What party did you belong to over in Germany?" And he said, "I belong to the Christian Democrat Party." And he said, "Well, that wouldn't do over here. You'd have to be one or the other, but you couldn't be both." This incident of the temptation of Jesus occurred first right after the baptism. He'd gone, in a sense, you might say, from the high to the low in experience. He'd gone out to this place that's referred to as the wilderness. It's thought to be a place about 8 miles west of Jericho. It's on the west bank, on the west side of the Jordan River. There's a barren limestone peak there that rises up some 1,500 feet above the plain. And that is thought to have been the place. Since the Crusades, it's been called Quarantania, and I'll refer to that in a moment. Quarantania is the place down near the place where the Dead Sea Scrolls were more recently discovered. And he'd been there fasting for 40 days. Now, I don't know whether it meant that for 40 days he had eaten nothing or not. At any rate, he'd been on a 40-day fast. He'd gone off to the wilderness to reflect, as others had done. Moses Paul, you know, went into Arabia to reflect. And I think sometimes we miss that opportunity of going off to ourselves and thinking things through. This number 40 is a number that appears in so many incidents in the Bible. Moses fasted 40 days. And Elijah did too. And you remember the flood lasted 40 days. And the Jews were 40 years in their wanderings in the wilderness. Over in Leviticus, I believe it is, it's prescribed that there should be 40 stripes to the offender. The desolation of Egypt was 40 years. Moses lived 120 years divided into three periods of 40 years each. Moses interceded 40 days for his people. And when a child was born, the mother spent 40 days in purification of the girl baby and twice 40 days with the boy. But you see that number 40. I don't know why, but running through all and many other incidents could be given. And the very word quarantine, I said that country over there since the Crusades has been called Quarantania. Quarantine means 40 days. We put a home or an area under quarantine. 40 days off to themselves, just as Christ went off to himself for 40 days. Well, I just thought it was interesting to call your attention. There's numerous places in the Bible where the figure 40 appears. And you remember Elijah had a similar experience. He'd gone up to make his demands on Ahab and Jezebel. And then he had fled south. And he'd gone on and he had been hungered for a long time. He threw himself down and he prayed for death. And the first thing the Lord did was to feed him. Because that was the thing that was troubling him. He was hungry, worn out. Another thing that occurred to me in connection with this lesson is that we know only what Jesus had told. Because he'd gone off to himself up here in the mountain, you see. And so whatever happened, whatever we know about what happened, was what Jesus told when he came back. It necessarily came from him as to the incidents that occurred there. It's like the story that somebody told about a man who went to church and he went to sleep and he had a dream that he was being, while he was up there in church, he had a terrible dream about some great disaster that was going to happen to him. And something in connection with the dream frightened him so that he had a heart attack and died. Somebody said, well, how did anybody know what he was dreaming about if he was asleep when he had that dream? Well, that's maybe an overdrawn illustration of this, but we only know what Christ told about the incident up here on this, in this wilderness. Now let's think a little while about something we repeat every day. We ask in the Lord's Prayer, lead us not into temptation. Do you think that God leads us into temptation? Does that trouble you to think that maybe God leads us into temptation? Maybe our interpretation, the original, is not quite as accurate as it could be. I'm not sure just how it would be changed. But this is the meaning, I'm sure. God tries us. The devil tempts us. God doesn't go out like a law enforcement officer and try to get somebody to violate the law so they can catch him. He doesn't do that. God puts us on trial. There's no doubt about that. He tried Abraham. And his faith was proved. He asked Abraham to go out. You remember, and sacrifice his own son. He tried Abraham. And after Abraham went and his faith was proven, Abraham was a stronger man by reason of the trial. He tried Job. You remember those first two chapters of Job where God had a conversation with the devil? And the devil said, in effect, every man has his pride. And God said, well, what what do you think about my servant Job? And the devil said, well, he'd have his prize too. And the Lord said, I'm going to turn him over to you. You go over and see what you can do with Job and see whether you can really change it by all your temptation. And you remember he tried and his friends were brought in. And Job was sorely tempted in one manner and then another manner. But Job didn't fail. He was tried. He wasn't tempted by God. He was tempted by the devil. But God permitted him to be tried. Eve was tempted and she failed. David was tempted and he didn't always hold up so well either. Why does God permit us to be tested? Well, because when we stand up under a test, we're spiritually stronger. Why do you let your little children go to school and worry about their lessons and have to take an examination? Do you think it would be better if each night they come home, they give you the problems, and you work out their problems, assuming you can do that? Do you think that would help the children? Do you think when they study Latin, it'd be well for them to get a little pony and make it easy for them? No, that isn't the theory of our education at all. It's only through struggling, through testing, that we grow. Over in 1 James, it says, let no man say when he is tempted, I am tempted of God. For God cannot be tempted with evil, neither tempteth he any man. God doesn't tempt us. He doesn't try to get us to do wrong. He tests us in order to make us stronger to resist the evil. And that's the meaning of that petition in the Lord's Prayer, when it says, lead us not into temptation. Let us not fail or succumb to the temptation of the devil. Now, next I would like to consider with you a moment, was Jesus really tempted? Does it seem strange to you that with the powers he had, that the devil could come to him and bring out a weakness? Do you think Jesus was really seriously troubled, or he had any doubt about overcoming the temptation? How do you feel about that? Well, if he didn't, if it was just a sort of a sparring with the devil, then he wasn't tempted at all. No, he came up there, he was very hungry. He'd gone without food, day after day. He'd been for 40 days. He'd been in the wilderness and fasted. As I said, it came out right after the high experience of the baptism. The first temptation that the devil tried on him was, he said to him, why don't you use your spiritual powers to overcome your physical need? Here are all these stones here. Why don't you make a loaf of bread out of one of them? They're shaped pretty like the loaf of bread that they had then. Why don't you make a loaf of bread here, and then you'll have something to eat? Well, I think, right, you see, we're dealing with human and divine here together, and it's a little hard to separate them, but he who could provide food for 5,000 later on could, I am sure, have changed one of these stones into bread. But he didn't do it. Why didn't he do it? Not because he knew it wasn't right to use his spiritual power to supply his mere physical need. You see, there, the devil was appealing. The devil always appeals to some form of weakness. He was appealing there to a physical weakness. Hunger. Supply your own hunger. And he thought maybe he might weaken because he was hungry. The next temptation was a temptation appealing to vanity. He says, why don't you go up on the temple, up there in the presence of the great crowd, and stand away up on the pinnacle, on the high point of the temple, and jump off. And then the devil said to him, you know, the devil said, if thou be the Son of God, cast thyself down, for it is written, he shall give his angels charge concerning thee, and in their hands they shall bear thee up, lest thou cast thy foot against a stone. There was a case where even Shakespeare remarked about that. But in the characteristic way, he didn't quote it all. He left out a little of it. But he was appealing to his vanity. Go up there and perform a stunt. Nothing will happen to you because God will protect you, he said. He was appealing first to hunger and second to his vanity, or what he thought would be his vanity. And then the third temptation was when the devil took him up on the high mountain and showed him all the governments of the world. He said, now if you'll fall down and worship me, I'll make you the ruler of all the world. That third was where he appealed to his ambition, selfish ambition. Well, as I said to you, Satan didn't quote all the scripture. He gave the angels charge over us. But Satan omitted the words, to keep thee in all thy ways. You wouldn't expect Satan to quote scripture quite accurately, would you? And so this third temptation is like the temptation that the Russian government makes to some of these little satellite countries. Come on and join us. We'll divide up the land. We'll give you all those things and promise something whether you can really perform or not. The question is whether Jesus would find an easier way, take an easier way rather than a way of suffering, because he certainly had learned by this time that the course was going to be very rough. He was going to have a very troublesome time. Now, would he take the easy way out? And it would have been a very popular way. The people wanted him to come and be there. They looked for the Messiah to come as a king, do away with Rome, and give them a new government. So it would have been very popular for him to have done it immediately. It's the immediate against the remote, the physical against the spirit, the selfish against the unselfish that people fall for. Would he use any of his powers for himself? The banker who goes in and handles a great deal of money, as long as other people's money, well, he tries to handle it accurately and all that. But whenever he begins to think, well, some of that money looks pretty good in my own pocket, then, don't you see, he's beginning to yield to temptation. And you know, it's a remarkable thing. When you study the whole life of Christ, Christ never performed a supernatural power for his own selfish benefit. He refused here. He refused all the way through. These are not the only temptations Christ ever had. All through his ministry, he used all manner of supernatural powers to heal disease, to restore the sight to the blind, even to bring the dead back to life. He did not use supernatural powers for his own selfish benefit. And so while it's very troublesome for us to separate the divine from the human in the life of Christ, I think it's true that Christ was actually tempted, else this whole lesson means nothing at all. He was tempted of the devil. You know, there is the contest between good and evil, and the forces of good and the forces of evil going on all the time, all through our lives, all through the ages. Those forces have been working against each other. They seem sometimes to be very evenly divided, and sometimes I think we get the feeling maybe the forces of evil prevail more than the forces of good, but they don't. But the scales are not very unevenly balanced. And if you feel that you're very unimportant in this life, just remember that just one man on the right side, or one man's deed, or even one man's word may be sufficient to tip the balance in the favor of the right against the wrong. Let me make a little comparison with our present day life. You know, mankind is always in a crisis. There never has been a time when there weren't great problems facing mankind. Civilization always seemed to be in the balance from the beginning. In America today, let's see how discouraged we can get. I'm going to try to state accurately these things. Our resources, other than coal, are becoming pretty well worked out. They're not depleted, but some of them are depleted. A number of our resources, mercury and so on, are gone. Our population is increasing so rapidly that some people are really fearful that the human race will starve to death because there'll be too many of them. And it really is a rapid increase. I mentioned here once before that the population of the 13 colonies was about equal to the present population of Kentucky, and we add that much to the population of this country every year. The population has increased so rapidly that somebody has said 7% of the people who have lived since the time of Christ are still living, because there's many more now than there were in the previous generation. And so that's something to worry about. And then we come down to a situation here where we have, within our time, developed weapons whereby, for the first time, mankind can destroy the world. That has never been true before. And then another thing has happened within our time. Atheism has come into a great power. It has governments and money, armies back up. And within our time, governments representing almost half of the people of the world are bent on our destruction. They would like to destroy every free institution we have. We've got a little jittery. Sputnik goes up and we get afraid. We have a little recession and we talk about spending ourselves out of it, and we just get all beside ourselves. I don't think communism is going to succeed. The great world conquerors never have succeeded over a long period of time. I don't think America is going to fail, because I think we're going to accept the challenge. I don't think we're going to yield to a temptation to take an easy way out and a shortcut and have some kind of a compromise or give in some way. I don't think that at all. But I think we have to recognize the problem. We're not going to appease, have shortcuts. They say this little ermine that has such marvelous fur, as an animal way up north, that people trap, and they don't like to injure it because it might hurt the fur. But they've learned that little ermine is an animal that just loves smooth surfaces. So they take, instead of a trap, take some kind of a knife with a smooth surface and put some kind of a greasy food on it, and the ermine comes along and he gets his tongue on that cold steel, and the tongue sticks to the steel and he gives himself away with his tongue. I'm afraid so many of us do that too. A little boy in school goes in and he's the first one in the room in the morning, and he looks up there and there's a 50-cent piece on the teacher's desk. Well, he's never done anything wrong. He has no real temptation. But another little boy comes in and he says to him, "Look, there's a 50-cent piece. Let's take it, we can divide it." And the first boy says, "Well, has it?" And the second boy says, "Well, nobody will ever know about it. We keep it absolutely quiet among ourselves. Let's go ahead." And there becomes the little boy's first temptation. An easy way to get some money quick. That's the way it always comes. We're tempted to worship money, power, influence. We like to buy influence if we can. That's all we have constantly with us, these temptations. I think I shouldn't close this lesson without mentioning the value of leisure. Jesus had gone up to the desert, as Paul had done. Got off to himself, and I think really a person ought to get off to themselves some. He said that the poet Shelley, you know, said to somebody, he wanted to use all of his time. He studied Portuguese while he was shaving, and he studied a little Spanish while he was having his breakfast, and he read in the morning and wrote in the afternoon. And some old Quaker woman said to him, "Friend, when dost thou do thy thinking?" You need to get off sometimes and reflect. Turn things over in your mind and think of things over. And that's the reason, I think, that even Christ went off into the desert to think and to pray. And then after he had resisted these temptations, the very last verse of this lesson, "Then the devil leaveth him And behold, angels came and ministered unto him. The devil went away. Peter says, resist the devil and he will flee from you. Having won out. Now, as I said a while ago, there's a great deal. I wouldn't profess to be able to get up here and give you all the answers. If I were teaching a class in physics, and we came around to study electricity, and there's a lot we know about electricity, but they're fundamentally, that's what it is, we don't know. And I wouldn't undertake to say that class that I know what electricity is. Or if we got down to study gravity, so important to us, I wouldn't profess to say I know what gravity is. None of the great scientists have known, and I don't think I'm going to say that. And I want to teach this lesson about Christ and the bringing in here of the divine and the human together. I don't say that I have the answers or that any of us have all the answers. You know, Newton said one time near the end of his life, he said he felt like a small boy standing on the seashore, picking up a few rocks while all the ocean of undiscovered truth lay before him. There's so much we do not know. I've mentioned before the incident about Lincoln and Joyce Speed, which Joyce Speed's nephew and namesake had told me one time. About the time when Lincoln and Joyce, as young men, had come down to Louisville, and Joyce's mother had given them Bibles, you know. And later years, when Joyce visited Lincoln in the White House, he went in and Lincoln was reading the Bible. And Joyce said, "Well, Mr. President, I'm glad to see you so well occupied. I hope you're not as skeptical as we used to be as young men." And Lincoln went over to him, put his hand on his shoulder, and he said, "Speed, take this book on reading as far as you can. Balance on faith, and you'll live and die happier and a better man." Somewhere or other, the greater the known, the greater the unknown. A man with no education would be living in a shell. A man with education can see out to the horizon. And then as he knows there's more and more beyond the horizon. And as the horizon stretches out, the unknown beyond gets bigger and bigger. Some way heaven grows as the earth shrinks, heaven gets bigger. And we ought to keep on trying. Keep on studying. Don't make an easy thing of your religious education. There's a great deal more beyond. Robert Browning, great philosophical poet in the Ring of the Book, said this: "When comes temptation but for man to meet and master, and make crouch beneath his foot, and so be pedestaled in triumph?" And Cowper said, "And Satan trembles when he sees the weakest saint upon his knees." We go on now through not just Matthew. We take from the different three synoptic gospels and follow through in this 6-month course of lessons.